It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. And on today's show, we're going to talk about fantasy football awards for the 2021 season, our biggest hits, our misses, players that busted, players you loved, our greatest calls of the season. We're going to lay it all, and the pretty, all out on the table. Adam, this is going to be a fun episode, man. We get to kind of lay into the W's as well as lament the losses, my friend.
Yeah, and that's important. Like, I think it's fun to talk about some of the situations and players that you hit on, but it's also just as important to talk about some of the situations and players you missed on and why that happened. So, but yeah, it was a very fun season, and I hopefully some, you know, I saw you had some success over at Drafters, and hopefully your season long and dynasty leagues went well. I mean, that Monday night game was a sweat for many reasons, but overall, I had a great season. And look, the last couple of days, I've been really excited and just thinking about all the offseason pods we're going to do here with, you know, obviously the rookie stuff, the draft stuff, dynasty, a bunch of stuff. It's going to be an exciting offseason. So just because some of these regular season episodes are coming to an end, do not go anywhere, because at Fade the Chalk, we are going to be having, so much content here on the pod for the entire offseason. So again, don't be sad that the season's about to be over. Plus, we still got playoffs, too, so.
Oh, man, we're not slowing down. We're not going anywhere. No way, man. Like, you talked about it. We're going to go through prospects. We're going to go through all the offseason stuff. I'm packing my bags and heading down with a few of the boys from FTN to go to Senior Bowl to get a look at all these prospects with my own eyes. I mean, dude, we're not slowing down. There is no offseason, regardless of, you know, what you're here for. If it's draft content, prospect content, all the dynasty talk throughout the entire offseason until the week one again next year. So hell no, dude. We're diving in deeper. We're going that extra mile for to help people in dynasty leagues and everything else, dude. So no, we aren't going anywhere. And look, before we get into all of these players, we're going to talk about hand out these awards, whether great or horrible. Got to mention to everybody out there again, need to get signed up for the FTN Daily Lineup Optimizer Package today, starting at $49 a month. This thing is fantastic. So you're talking about optimizers, roster percentage projections, all for one low price. You can start building your bankroll. And if you're following the @FTN Daily account on Twitter, you're seeing all this. You're seeing the stream of just green screens, dude, across multiple sports, esports, all kinds of stuff. Use the code FTNTV, get 15% off of every single month, not just a one-time buy, and it's gone. So enjoy that today, and get ready, man. Get into the sweats. We're still going to be doing DFS stuff for the site, for the playoffs. So again, not going anywhere. And again, to talk about, like, if you want to sit here and come try to take my money, and I'm talking about DFS action, one of the best spots out there, and people need to hear the good news on, is Top Prop Fantasy. You can go face me in the battleground. It's head to heads. It's literally the easiest format and content you can try to attack in DFS. You're simply picking any player to score more fantasy points than the other player. That's it. No other strings attached. No other bells and whistles. It's all you got to do. So head over to topropfantasy.com. Get signed up with the promo code FTN50. And look, like I said, come try to take my money, man. We still got weeks in the NFL playoffs. Week 18 is here. So the action is real, man, and come tail it. Adam, before we get into this, man, I mean, look, this is a really interesting list. Like, just to lay this out for the good people. MVPs are the biggest bust of the season. Comeback players, the best breakout, our best hits, our worst misses. We're going to lay all of this out, man. What are your thoughts before we dive into this list? Like, are there any names before we kind of get to this that, like, really, really jump out at you?
There might be a few. The thing I like about this list is, it outside of maybe one or two players, and again, we could have put like rookie of the year. I don't think we need to spend 10 minutes saying why it was Ja'Marr Chase. So as good as, you know, Najee Harris and some of these other players were, it's obviously Ja'Marr Chase, but there, like, a couple of these awards, like comeback player, I think you could go like 10 different ways in that direction. And we talked about it before we turned the mics on, but for bust, I tweeted this yesterday, kind of. I said, who, you know, outside of really like major injury, like missing the entire season or something like that, who had been the most disappointing player in fantasy this year? And there were probably two consensus answers, but then there was a ton of others that I didn't really even consider until looking at it. So there's a lot to break down, and I think this will be fun. And of course, we'll start with the award that's probably the easiest, but I'm sure you'll have a great time talking about this player.
You are damn right I will, because I was higher than most people. I went on multiple podcasts in the preseason action.
I mean, you had your own podcast where you argued with a certain Bills fan about which Rams receiver was better in 2020.
Dude, look, I understand there's a lot of people out there that were telling you that Cooper Kupp was going to be awesome. Hell, even as high as I was, and if you were in all the fantasy streets beginning of the preseason and best ball and stuff, I mean, my best ball exposures show this. My highest exposed to wide receiver, I had him ranked, I think it was the wide receiver 10 or 11 in our preseason rankings. Mm-hmm. And apparently I was not high enough on Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, you missed on this. You stink.
Dude, I was out there fighting people on a daily basis about, like, look, like, it's all recency bias about Robert Woods. And this is not to sit here and throw salt in the wound for you. And I know he got hurt.
I was literally going to say it's a lot of it came down to me just like I Robert Woods is one of my favorite players in the NFL. So it was going to be difficult for me to move off of him. But I just Cooper Kupp, like, he's what is it? We're recording this on Thursday. He just caught a pass again. Like, it's Thursday morning. And he's like, it's just ridiculous.
It's absolutely insane. If you just go through his game log, Adam, like, there's no way he's not the damn MVP. Like, looking at his end of the season stats, 184 targets, 1,829 receiving yards, and he's going to add to that total. He has an easy shot at 2,000. And as crazy as that says, like, I mean, like, the type of volume, you can't tell me that they're not going to try to, like, at least push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah, Sean McVay said he's not going to call plays for that. I disagree.
Okay, sure, Sean. Okay.
But then again, he doesn't have to call plays. Same thing as, like, yesteryear, like, he doesn't have to call plays for that, because that's just their offense. Like, he's just going to walk into 8 to 12 catches every week anyway.
I mean, you go through his game logs, and it's absolute insanity, man. Like, 92 or more receiving yards in every single freaking game but one. He got, nine or more targets in every game except for week 17. He was legit, if you go just by, like, weekly stuff, he was a top 12 wide receiver in every single game except for one, which at the time, Arizona was a top 3 team against slot wide receivers, and Byron Murphy has played really well this year. That is legit the only game that Cooper Kupp, you could say, stunk. And when I say stunk, he finished outside the top 36 wide receivers. He was wide receiver 40 on the week. His season this year is just insane. You put this up with, like, Davante Adams' best seasons in the recent years. Michael Thomas, the year that he went off. Like, that's the same. And people don't, I still feel like if you're in dynasty circles, people still don't give Cooper Kupp enough damn credit for, I mean, look, he's going to have this role next year. What's going to change? Oh, Robert Woods is going to come back. Oh, Van Jefferson or Odell Beckham. None of those things mattered, Adam. Like, he could be the damn MVP next year and get this type of volume. And, like, maybe he regresses in touchdowns and yards. But this type of volume? Hell, this is on the table for next year.
Yeah, he's amazing. It got to the point where if you were facing Cooper Kupp in a league, you were hoping for a game he had last week, which was still a great game. But, like, that's how good it was. Like, if Cooper Kupp had 95 yards and touchdown like he had in week 17, that was probably best case scenario if you were facing him. That, like, he's been under 20 PPR points just 3 times all year. He's been over 30 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. Like, just unbelievable. And the other part of it we haven't really discussed with Cooper Kupp is, like you said, you had him at wide receiver 10, which was way higher than consensus. he was coming off the board in drafts, usually in that in between wide receiver 15 and 20. So to not just be the wide receiver one for the season, but by a landslide, and to have been drafted in the fourth round as the wide receiver 15, you know, 17, 18, that just, he's the best player in fantasy, and he was a massive value because this time, you know, next summer, probably, you know, first round draft pick in fantasy draft. So just unbelievable. He, again, it's an extra game, but he, you know, he can break Calvin Johnson's receiving yardage record and Michael Thomas's reception record in a season this time next week. So just unbelievable, unstoppable. Again, if you were facing Cooper Kupp, if you had Cooper Kupp on your team, you probably made at least the playoffs. It's just like I had a team with Cooper Kupp. The rest of the team was okay. It wasn't amazing, but Cooper Kupp just gave you such an advantage each week. And that's saying something considering there's still a lot of good receivers in fantasy.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, we could talk about, and the only other player that I feel like you could talk about in the same breath as Cooper Kupp this year, and even it alone gets, maybe if Derrick Henry stayed healthy, maybe he's in this conversation. But Jonathan Taylor is the only other player that I think you can reasonably put in the same parking lot as Cooper Kupp for this season and what he meant to fantasy teams. There are two players that if you look at like best ball exposures, and we'll have a lot of offseason content in best ball, if you're looking at the top of the leaderboards in multiple tournaments, formats, whether it's drafters, underdogs, whatever, you know, you're looking at a handful of players that are making those final teams. It's Cooper Kupp, it's Jonathan Taylor, probably a lot of them have Austin Eckler and a handful of other dudes. Debo as well, and we're going to talk about him, man. Like, there are multiple players that are carried people to the top, and you see this across best ball exposures, but there's also a ton of players that just crushed you throughout the fantasy season, whether you draft them in the first round, hell, you draft them in the third round or the fourth round, whatever. There's so many potholes, man. Who makes that biggest bust list for you this year?
So this one was tough for me just because there were a ton of players that underwhelmed, right? I think the two players that stand out the most are Allen Robinson and Saquon Barkley. Barkley missed some time, but obviously when he was on the field, he only really had one spike week. That was the Saints game. That game went to overtime, and it took a long run in overtime, if I'm not mistaken, in that game. Just the entire Giants offense, you can make the case, right? Galladay, bust. Daniel Jones was a popular sleeper, breakout quarterback. He stunk. You know, Barkley was bad. The offense was just a mess. And then Allen Robinson, I mean, just, I don't think anybody saw that coming. Allen Robinson was one of the receivers that was being drafted ahead of Cooper Kupp. We thought he would be 150 targets in his sleep, and just didn't happen. It was very, very odd. But if you want to go elsewhere, I mean, DeAndre Hopkins, I know he missed a little bit of time too, and it's going to be tough to find players that didn't miss time. But when he was on the field, he was not the alpha we've grown accustomed to seeing. He didn't see a ton of double-digit target weeks. He didn't, like, he was very touchdown dependent. We talked about this a lot, but he was pretty touchdown dependent. Arizona was spreading the ball around a lot. You look at his per game numbers in PPR leagues, he averaged 14.7 PPR points per game, which was like outside the top 20, it looks like. I mean, that's not what you signed up for. It was just very weird to see him not consistently get 10 to 12 targets. And I mean, he had double digit targets once all year, and that was in week 14.
Oof.
And he only caught five of them for 54 yards. That was the Monday night game against the Rams where he had a couple bad drops. It was just weird. And we know the Cardinals, we talked about this with Cliff Kingsbury for the last 2 years now, they don't move him around the formation, which is odd, but if he's not being moved around the formation and you're not getting double-digit targets, like, it's tough for his targets to really all of a sudden go back up if he's not being used differently. So I think Hopkins needs to be in consideration. And I'll add one more. I don't think he was a flat-out bust, but I do think he was underwhelming, and that's Aaron Jones. I think he only missed one game. He obviously has the spike weeks with the touchdowns, but A.J. Dillon was used a lot more, especially in the second half. And Jones was kind of like DeAndre Hopkins at running back. He was pretty touchdown dependent. The workload wasn't incredible. So I think Robinson and Barkley stand out as the clear selections, but I think Hopkins and Aaron Jones were pretty underwhelming, especially given the expectations and the pedigree for these two players as well.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of those calls, man. I mean, I'm kind of sticking with two running backs that I was extremely high on. And I'm going to say a bust for the hopes that we had for him. And his end of the season totals don't look that bad. They don't. But if you had this player on your team, it wasn't the transcendence that you thought. And I could be describing one of two different guys. And they both make the bill for me, man. And that's Antonio Gibson and CEH. I was incredibly high. Like, Gibson was not the player. Like, if your absolute upper echelon range of outcomes for him, even the floor was low on a lot of weeks, man. Like, I missed on that. I had a ton of exposure to Antonio Gibson in multiple formats, whether it's best ball, and he was a bust. I mean, as a guy that they never gave him up until the end of the season. Pass game work. The offense was a total damn mess without Ryan Fitzpatrick. And you look at, like, the defense was so bad. And that was one of the reasons why I was so high on Antonio Gibson. Outside of, yes, could he catch more passes, was that I thought the defense was either going to be better or not take that far of a step back. And you look at Gibson's, you know, first few weeks of the season. Okay, RB 25, 31, 17, 20, 13. Those aren't really bad, but then you get the next few weeks that follow it up, 43, 34, 35. I mean, plus he's missed some time with COVID last week. Like, it's just, it wasn't what you expected, man. And I could say the same thing for CEH. Like, I was super high on him. We talked about him all season, and he easily could make the worst miss column for me. And he was a guy that, look, he wasn't going in the first round, but he was going in the top three rounds of all your drafts. I mean, if you were in best balls even early in the year, third round, he got up to the second round before the season kicked off. It was maddening, dude. Like, whether it was the usage, the injuries. And honestly, he wasn't effective. He didn't look like the same player that we saw in his rookie season. Make small flashes of that. But even the elusivity, it went down, and his tackle breaking wasn't as good as it was before. It just, I don't know, man. It was a really sad case for both of those players in their seasons.
Yeah, Gibson reminds me of the Giants. You could say Barkley and Galladay for the Giants, and you could say Gibson and McLaurin for Washington. And we know in Terry McLaurin's case, it's quarterback driven, it's offense driven. Like, we know Terry McLaurin. It's talent wise, probably top 12 in the NFL, like contested catch, everything. Like, he's an absolute stud, but the offense was bad. But yeah, Gibson is just, we the last couple of years, we've heard Ron Rivera and we've heard Scott Turner, you know, he's Christian McCaffrey. He's going to be Christian McCaffrey in our offense. And unless JD McKissick was out, like, the passing game work was pretty underwhelming. And I know he dealt with the shin injury for most of the season, pretty much, but he still played through it. And I mean, he was pushing, you know, early second round status in drafts this summer, and just definitely didn't live up to it. You know, CH, again, he missed a lot of time too, but you could tell right away, like, he probably wasn't going to live up to it, just because it's still for the second straight year. They didn't trust him at the goal line. They didn't want to, you know, run the ball at the goal line. He did look good in some games though, when he's been healthy, like that Steelers game, like just met in the backfield immediately and just broke through two tackles and scored. Like, he's an interesting, I think he's one of the more interesting players in Dynasty, because obviously, like, he's well behind Jonathan Taylor and the other running backs that were drafted in that draft class. And, but, like, it's still a young player and a good offense. I wonder what we see from the Chiefs in the playoffs. If it's, you know, 50-50 between Darrell Williams and CEH, because Darrell Williams has been productive, you know, so. Yeah, I think there's a handful of players that you could make the argument for that have been, you know, underwhelming. Like, I was insanely, insanely high on Zeke this season. And yeah, he finished as the RB 5 or 6. But, like, clearly that was, it just wasn't, it didn't pan out. Like, I had Zeke as a top 3 running back on the season. And obviously, like, he looked good before the injury. And then he's playing with that brace on, clearly not 100%, probably shouldn't have been playing. He probably should have took 2 or 3 weeks off. And because he didn't miss any games, he did finish as the RB6, but we know on a per game basis, he wasn't as good. There were a lot of times where we had these running backs, you know, emerge from injuries, right? It was, you know, for a lot of time, it was what? Do you start Zeke or do you start Khalil Herbert when he was starting for the Bears? Or do you start Zeke or do you start Donta Foreman when he was getting some run? Do you start Zeke or do you start Rashad Penny? And so it's like, that shouldn't have been questions for a first round draft selection. So, the end of season numbers, they don't always tell the whole story, especially in this case. So I hope for Zeke's case, it was just the injury was what made him look a lot worse the last couple weeks of the season. But, I'll take that L as well, as Zeke clearly was not a top five running back, let alone top three.
Yeah, I mean, I was right there with you as far as, and we could talk about, a lot of these players, is it health? But all of these factors, it doesn't really matter at the end of the season, Adam. At the end of the season, it's like, did you produce? Did you not? And yes, we can give context to all these different things, but that doesn't mean that they paid off where you drafted them walking into the season, regardless of the format that you're in, versus players that, like, you might have gotten a great discount on. Players that maybe they overperformed. Maybe it was just that they were hurt and you got the injury discount. And when they came back, they were fantastic. So I know I love your call for comeback player of the year right now, man. So go ahead. The floor is yours.
This is an awesome one. You could go a ton of different directions. And we both did. I thought about a handful of players, but I'm going Deebo Samuel. I know he missed a handful of games last season, but for me, it's the way he was used. Deebo Samuel, first of all, finished, again, we have one more week, but we're ending the fantasy season right now because it's, there's not really many leagues that are active right now. So after week 17, wide receiver 3 in overall scoring and points per game, just remind everybody that he's an awesome football player. And the season started with him getting a ton of targets, right? 12, 8, 10, 13, 9, 11, 9, 9. And Kittle missed some time during that span, and Brandon Ayuk was not a full-time player a lot during that span. And then Elijah Mitchell breaks out as the running back, gets a little bit banged up. Then they start giving Deebo Samuel carries. Since week 10, 5, 8, 6, 8, 6, 5, and 7 carries. I mean, he's got 7 rushing touchdowns. He's got 6 receiving touchdowns. He's got 73 receptions, 1,300 yards. And what was the case with Deebo Samuel last year? Nothing down the field, everything right line of scrimmage. Last season, he averaged, and this is not a typo, Deebo Samuel averaged negative 0.2 yards before the catch perception. Easily the low, like that's running back type usage, right? It was right next to Melvin Gordon. Like, it was easily the lowest among receivers. This season, however, we see Deebo Samuel being used more down the field, making more explosive plays down the field. His yards before the catch perception went up to, or from zero, from negative 0.02 to, let's see, where is it this year? I just had it, but it's obviously, I'm making the case that it's higher. I'll find it in a second. But overall, just the way he's used, tackle breaking machine, like just an awesome football player. And he reminded everybody that. And you talked about, discounts on players who have been injured in the past. Deebo's obviously had trouble staying healthy, but it's like, I kind of say this a lot, like a player is injury prone or dealing with injuries, until he's not. And then when he's not, you get reminded of how freaking good they are at football. And that is the exact case for Deebo Samuel, who, again, you could have went a bunch of different directions, but I'm going with Deebo Samuel as comeback player of the year. By the way, 8.2 yards before the catch perception, whereas last year it was minus 0.2.
I love the Deebo call, and he was a player that honestly, and I'll take the L on Deebo, man. Like, I was out there because we didn't see this type of role. Like, how did you know this role was coming?
And to be fair, you and I were both absolutely out on Brandon Ayuk, but it wasn't.
I was out on Deebo. Like,
but, he was, and that's what I was getting at. It wasn't because we were in on Deebo necessarily. It was just because we thought Ayuk was being drafted too high. And again, like, I've always thought Deebo was an incredible player, but it's like, if I was worried about Ayuk's numbers in that offense where, okay, he only had the targets because Deebo and Kittle were out, I expected all three to be healthy, plus it's a run for his team, plus we didn't know if Trey Lance is going to be the quarterback. It's a lot of moving parts, but man, he's just so good at football. And it's just every single game this year, it's like, oh, Deebo broke a 60-yard play in the running game or in the passing game, and it's just, it's unbelievable. He's so fun to watch.
He was incredible, man. And the alpha type of usage he got all season, and it moved over to a different realm with the rushing department like you laid out. I mean, the production never stopped. Even though the role changed at various points, the production never stopped. So
that's a great way to put it too. Like he had that stretch right from week 11 on where it was 2, 4, 1, 5 targets, but he had in between 6 and 8 rushing yards or rushing carries. And in that same span, that's when he scored, 5 rushing touchdowns? Mm-hmm. So there from week 10 to week, let's see, week 10 to week 15, Debo had a total of 7, 11, 12, 17 targets from week 10 to 15. Not good. But in that same span, he had 14, 20, 28, and 33 rushing attempts with 2, 4, 5, 6 rushing touchdowns. So, like you said, the passing game role wasn't as great, but that a lot of those games Elijah Mitchell was hurt, and they said, you know what? Debo Samuel's our best player. Just give him the ball on carries, because this has been the case of Debo for his entire career. When he gets the ball, he's very difficult to tackle. Not necessarily just because he's outrunning you and making you miss. He can run over you. Give San Francisco credit. They did what a lot of teams somehow fail to do on their offense. They just give the ball to their best players. It's that simple.
I know, sounds insane, right? But it's that easy. And that's why I got to go with, and I know we always talk about, especially in redraft formats, things like that, about waiting on quarterbacks. You could have done that and still gotten this player, especially with the way that preseason talk came out, because apparently preseason talk, Jamar Chase couldn't catch a ball that had white on it. He could not catch a ball outside of the college realm. He forgot how to play football. He was apparently just going to be a wash and a bust and all this different type of stuff in the preseason. And Joe Burrow said, hell no, let's go. At the end of the season, man, QB9 in fantasy points per game, QB5 in total points. He was fantastic this year, man. Regardless of whatever you want to point to about him. I mean, over 4,600 passing yards, all the other metrics came up, whether it's completion rate, yards per attempt. I mean, the guy was fantastic, Adam. We saw this massive regression when you give a quarterback a deep threat that can actually catch, because I laid this out whenever I looked at the coaching and the offensive scheme and stuff for FTN Fantasy in the preseason, which I'll be doing those write-ups again this coming year, and looking at how these offenses functioned, it was like everybody in the preseason and last year's offseason were talking about, oh, Joe Burrow can't throw outside the numbers. Oh, maybe he's just not as good as we thought he was going to be. You have to, the type of regression that was inbound for this offense, at least, and maybe not in this sense, and how awesome they were, but it was coming regardless, because AJ Green, Tyler Boyd, these players that they pigeonholed into roles that they could not operate in, legit, I think they caught one of their deep targets, and now we're walking out of a season in fantasy where you have Joe Burrow, who is top 7 in deep ball completion rate. He's first in clean pocket completion percentage. I mean, good Lord. And the man has the 11th most deep attempts in the NFL. And you're seeing what Jamar Chase did in his rookie season. Joe Burrow was damn awesome, man. For all the questions that people had coming into this year. And yes, there was hope. There was also a lot of pessimism. And how much talk do we get from the NFL draft? Joe Burrow's going to get killed. They didn't draft Penei Sewell. Oh, shit. They went with Jamar Chase. They're going to get murdered.
After watching Jamar Chase, the entire season, but especially the last couple weeks, I wonder if anybody, because I remember this time last year, the Bengals fans were in the stands with, Penei Sewell signs. They were just ready for the draft. And
hadn't seen those lately. Weird.
And now it's just oh, my goodness. I mean, is there a more fun team for Dynasty, too, by the way? Burrow, Mixon, Higgins, and Chase? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding?
Dude, it's so good. By the way,
let me take an L here, because we got into some debates in the offseason about quarterback rankings. And granted, I didn't think the Titans receivers would miss so much time, but it wouldn't have mattered, honestly, with the way Burrow played. I had Tannehill over Burrow. We talked about this, and you had Burrow. And just a massive L. I mean, Burrow, this offense, when Zach Taylor finally called games accordingly for when they should throw the ball, like the Ravens game, well, both Ravens games, I guess, this offense became... It was okay, just what are you going to do? Because their offensive line is still very bad in pass pro, but they were okay running the football, and they have the best trio of receivers in the NFL, and it's just they're so fun, and they're going to be tough for opposing defenses. I mean, we saw the Chiefs defense had been rolling going into that Bengals game, and granted, they haven't faced an offense nearly as good as the Bengals, but they just got absolutely destroyed. And by the way, I don't know what the Chiefs were doing. You know, cover zero, no safety help over Ja'Marr Chase the entire game. The guy's got 160 yards at this point, and they're just like, you know what, we'll keep going single coverage and see what happens. And he just absolutely shattered them. So, yeah, I mean, Joe Burrow, like, led the NFL in yards per attempt at 8.9, adjusted completion percentage at 79.4%. Like, he was just, especially the last couple weeks, I mean, just wow. Just wow. The Bengals' future is so bright.
It's so awesome, man. And like, they upgrade the offensive line even further in this offseason, add a few more parts to that defense, which
the defense was
super surprising.
I mean, Trey Hendrickson was awesome coming over. Their run defense was
great.
Yeah,
but he was already awesome, okay? My biggest surprise for that was, if I were to tell you Chidobe Awuzie was going to be a good shadow corner, you'd be like, shit, no, there's no way that's happening.
And their run defense, I talk about this on the DFS pod every week, they were a team that shut you down in the run. Like, you didn't get a lot of yards per carry, rushing yards. They give up receptions of running backs, but yeah, that's going to go overlooked because the offense is the focal point. They have all the young talent on offense, but their defense took a huge step forward this season. And again, they don't have to draft a single skill position player on offense, right?
Nope.
Like, Tyler Boyd has 2 years left on his contract. Chase is obviously locked in. Higgins is going into just his third season next year. And obviously you have Burrow. Do you need a tight end? I think CJ Uzomah is fine because the tight end's going to be the fourth, fifth option in your offense anyway. So you don't need to invest at tight end. So just draft offensive line and just add to that defense. You have a top tier safety in Jesse Bates. Like, Awuzie came over as a great corner. That team could be like this time, maybe next season. Anybody be shocked if they were the best team in the NFL?
I'm not going to be shocked if they even make a Super Bowl run this year.
Right. They have everything.
I mean, people could say that's hyperbole, but like, if you don't believe it's real, you really have not been watching Cincinnati.
They just beat the Chiefs. Like,
yeah.
Who would have thought that, like, a year from now, the Bengals would be beating the Chiefs to secure the AFC North title? Like,
I mean, like, what team, who is the AFC powerhouse that we say, like, could not have a stinker week and fall to the Bengals? Like,
there is none.
Who? Oh, Kansas City? Oh, yeah, because we haven't seen them.
I think there's literally only one quote unquote powerhouse in the NFL right now, and that's Green Bay. With Tampa Bay's injuries, with, Buffalo's been up and down. They've been up lately, but, like, I don't think they're a powerhouse. I don't think the Chiefs are, like, I think it's literally just Green Bay. And they won't have to play Green Bay unless they play in the Super Bowl, so.
I mean, I will not be surprised if Cincinnati ends up in the Super Bowl. Their team is a complete team, and this offense is unstoppable. We talked about this in multiple parts of the season, Adam. Like, you saw these offenses that were struggling because they didn't have the ability to counterpunch. It's like, okay, fine. You're going to sit here and take away part of the deep passing game. Okay, we'll just beat you with 1,000 cuts underneath. We're going to run the damn ball. They can do that. Cincinnati can do that. And they can be multiple and they can take whatever you give them and still put up a crap ton of points, man. So I love Joe Burrow. I love his outlooks in Dynasty walking into next year. It's easy. It's projectable. This offense looks like it could be really, really good for the next 2 to 3 seasons, man. So super excited. I love watching him come back and ball out. Let's get to breakouts, man. The best breakout of the fantasy season. We got a few different names on here. I'm going to let you kick this off here.
I mean, we all expected Cordarrelle Patterson to finish as a top 7 running back, right? Like,
yeah, that's exactly what we forecasted when he came up on the waiver wire episode. We told people to pick him up and get rid of him. Yeah. Ouch.
give Atlanta credit, too, because Patterson's always been an incredible football player. It's just he kind of got like, okay, he's a special teams player that occasionally plays receiver. And the Falcons said, you know what? Again, kind of a simple concept. Give the football to your best players. And I know they're missing Calvin Ridley, and I know Kyle Pitts was up and down, but like, Cordarrelle Patterson was what made this offense run the season. RB7 on the season, you know, about 15.5 points per game. And that was with, we talked about it. To be fair, it was a lot of the reason why we said that try to at least, you know, sell high. This was playing like 50% of the snaps. Like he and Mike Davis were splitting snaps anytime Mike Davis was active. And like he never really reached that like 65-70% threshold for snaps. So it became even more impressive. The passing game work kind of fell off a cliff lately, and Mike Davis was playing a lot more on third downs. But I think Patterson has to be on this list. And then the other player that I mentioned, and there's a lot you could break down from this list, but two tight ends. We talked a lot about the tight end breakout candidates all offseason. You know, Irv Smith obviously got hurt. Cole Kmet was a popular candidate for us. Firkser before the Julio trade. A lot of these tight ends. But two players we didn't really talk about, Dalton Schultz and Dawson Knox. I mean, if you lost tight end to injury or you waited at the position and, you know, went with like Jasicki, who didn't really pan out that much, or somewhere else. I mean, Dalton Schultz, man, like, was really productive when he played last year before Jarwin tore his ACL, or after Jarwin tore his ACL. And then this year, we talked about this. First of all, Ray Garvin, super high on Dalton Schultz. What a call by him. And Schultz, outside the top three, Andrews, Kelsey, Kittle, Dalton Schultz, tight end 4 in fantasy. Floor was there every single week. And it didn't matter when Jarwin was healthy. Schultz was the clear top tight end in this offense. And like with these players that kind of come out of nowhere, you assume they're old and stuff. But like Dalton Schultz is 25 and one of the best offenses in the NFL. So like I picked him up on two of my dynasty teams and he saved my season because both those teams I was really invested and excited about Irv Smith. And Dalton Schultz was available, and he saved my season, honestly, because he was so consistent all year, was very productive, end the season with 75 catches, just over 100 targets, had at least 5 receptions in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games. He was awesome. And then Dawson Knox, not as consistent, but obviously gave this Bills offense a new dimension, was probably one of the reasons why Stephon Diggs was a little bit underwhelming, although he was still very good. Clearly was that red zone option for Josh Allen. And just like I said, he missed a couple games too, but I think he was like the tight end 10 on the year. So I wanted to shout out some of those tight ends that helped because every year we talk about it, like, right? There's going to be a couple tight ends that break out if you find them, given the fact that they're a lot of times go undrafted or very late, which was the case for Schultz and Knox. They can be huge difference makers. And I think that was the case for both tight ends here.
And they were great, man. We talked about Dawson Knox, I remember, early in the offseason, and I labeled him as a buy-in dynasty. Mm-hmm. I thought that the talent was there. It really just came down to, can he ever get to where he can catch the ball functionally?
And the Bills talked about it. Like, they wanted Brandon Bean talked about it. Sean McDermott talked about it. They wanted more from the tight end position. There was rumors around Zach Ertz. I made a bold prediction about Evan Ingram at the deadline. But because Knox, and always a talented player, it's just he had issues with drops. And he still had a couple drops this year, but like, man, he was like, and first of all, not even just as a tight end, but run blocking, he was much improved. He was awesome. And now you don't have that question mark. You know, the Bills offense, we talked about this from Dynasty with the Bills all offseason. It was Josh Allen is obviously not going anywhere. Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are not going anywhere. Their core is locked in Buffalo. And now I think Dawson Knox has established himself as part of that core. And oh, by the way, Manuel Sanders on 1-year deal. Cole Beasley, I don't think will be there very much longer. So you have Diggs, you have Toe Drag Swag, and you have Dawson Knox. And you have Josh Allen. It's very exciting.
I just love that. I just noticed that you have managed to find a way to sneak in two Bills players into this episode. Maybe I was expecting more, but you know, either way, we're probably hitting the over here. which is not surprising at all, man. But before I get to my best breakout guys, I got to give Dalton Schultz some more love here, man. I mean, like, he's a guy also that, like, Michael Gallup is not going to be back in Dallas next year. And regardless of whatever we think with Amari Cooper's contract, they probably do keep him. But even if they don't, Dalton Schultz is an interesting guy in Dynasty. And he was fantastic this year. And he screams, even like, you rattled off the counting stats for him, Adam. Like, he screams as a player that deserves even more volume moving forward. So not to say, like, this could be the ceiling for Dalton Schultz. Could be. Absolutely could be. Could this also be, I don't want to say the floor, but could we not have yet not seen the full ceiling for him? Considering he's a player that, like, He oozed efficiency, man. Like, when he was ever targeted, he was 12th in yards per route run, 11th in fantasy points per route run. He's 11th in passer rating when he was targeted. All of these things scream a player that deserves more volume. And, jeez, man, he might get it. He might get it walking into next season, considering whatever they do in the offseason, which we'll be here breaking all of that down. So I love the season that Dalton Schultz had, and I even love him moving forward into next year, because he's not a name that's going to garner a lot of love. He's not going to get a lot of hype, and maybe he gets talked about in the offseason, but I still think we walk into next year, and he's probably going to be a guy that you're probably still going to be able to get as a value. And I screamed, I preached, I talked about this player all offseason. I fought the haters. I beat him back with a stick, man, the entire offseason, because guess what? The hate got too damn high, and people got drunk on their priors. Jalen Hurts was absolutely damn fantastic for fantasy this year. He was a QB7 in fantasy points per game, QB8 in total points. And for a player that I think everybody was sitting here crapping on, you saw a small contingent of people out there. Hell, people even were going as far as ranking him outside the top 12 quarterbacks in consensus rankings walking into the season. And let's just walk through the narrative tree here, Adam. Oh, he's going to get benched. Oh, he's not good at throwing the football. Oh, Joe Flacco might be the starting quarterback. Oh, Gardner Minshew might be the starting quarterback. There's no way he could throw the ball better. There's no way he can get better as a passer. For a guy that's 11th in red zone completion rate, he's a median range and deep ball rate. And as well, he massively improves in his play action rate. There's no way any of these things could possibly ever happen. Jalen Hurts is bad, he's always going to be bad, and nobody should ever worry about drafting him. And oh, I've got the gumption to sit here and rank him outside the top 12 quarterbacks, even though he runs. Pick your bad narrative off the tree, people, but it was all out there in the streets, and you heard it everywhere. Jalen Hurts was fantastic in fantasy, man, and I would still be scooping him up in Dynasty if you can. They're in the playoffs, man. He led this team to the playoffs in his first year. And yes, we could talk about all different functions of this team overplaying expectations. Jalen Hurts has to be in that conversation. And people still don't want to give him enough love for what he did in him really, truly, his rookie season. I can't have it, man. There's no way in this format that I'm going to get away from talking about Jalen Hurts.
He was unbelievable. There were two games in particular. It was the Denver game. The throws he made in that game were unbelievable. And it was, he was good in the last Washington game too, but the, what game was it? It was the first Washington. It was that Tuesday night Washington game. I know they're missing players, but he made every throw. And he's very, 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 very underrated all offseason. And like you said, I mean, you've been high on him all offseason. Now people are starting to see that he's, I think the Eagles, no matter what happens in the playoffs, if they get bounced in the first round, you go into the next season with all the draft picks they have, you add another receiver, you add more talent, you add to the defense, and you let Jalen Hurts, you let Jalen Hurts run this offense. You really do. So yeah, you expected a breakout season from him, and that's exactly what we got. And he was, the floor was obviously massive to fantasy. And this was with the Eagles, because remember in the beginning of the season, they were super pass heavy. And then they had a couple games where it was like Jalen Hurts was throwing like 17 times, but he was still great in fantasy despite throwing 17 times.
I love it, man. You love to see good players play good. And that's the case for Jalen Hurts. And then I'm going to sit here and step into and lean into some love on a W that you need to wear proudly, my friend. Darnell Mooney was nothing short of awesome this year. And people, yeah, I'm like, look, was he a top 12 wide receiver? No. Was he way better than anybody gave him credit? And he could walk out of this season. He's got a shot. He needs 71 yards, Adam, to have 1,000.
Dude, I just looked. Wait, is this right? Mooney's the wide receiver 27 right now. I did not think it was
wide
that
high. Receiver 27 in total points. He was the wide receiver 32 in fantasy points per game. And whether you were doing best balls earlier in the year, or hell, even his ADP still didn't creep up to where it was egregious at any point, man. And for a player that he was nothing short of awesome all year. He was the number one in this passing attack. He's their downfield weapon. He started getting more run in the red zone over the last few weeks. I mean, just look at what he did from week six to 12. So in the heart of the fantasy season, where you needed somebody in the stretch to sit or this was pivotal. The time where you were saying, okay, if I don't win these games, I'm going to get bounced. I have no shot at the playoffs. There's no way in hell I could possibly make it. Darnell Mooney, wide receiver 21, wide receiver 49. That's not great. Wide receiver 30, wide receiver 5, wide receiver 4, and in week 12, wide receiver 15. When your season was on the line this year, and we talked about Darnell Mooney walking into the season, you preached about him all freaking offseason, Adam. When people needed him most, he came through in a big, big damn way. Week 17, wide receiver 11. So you're looking at a player that he deserves to be on this list as best breakout. Hell, he needs to be on your list for best hits, Adam, because when people needed him in championship week, when they needed him whenever they were deciding, oh God, my season is tanked or I'm going to the playoffs, Darnell Mooney was a straight damn baller.
And I didn't think it would happen the way it did, because one of the huge reasons I was high on Mooney, outside of the fact that he's really good at football, and in his rookie season, he just created so much separation. But just, again, I think the stat I threw around all offseason was, I believe he had like 20 deep targets last year and didn't catch any of them, but he didn't drop any of them either. So they were all not catchable. I thought Fields would be much better in that role, and he was in his limited action, but he obviously missed a lot of games too. But I didn't think Mooney would just come in and be the wide receiver one over Allen Robinson. Like, even when they played together, it was always Mooney. You know, Mooney, I think, led the team in targets or had more targets than Robinson in, like, every game they played together. Mm-hmm. Again, it was just watching him in his rookie season, he just got separation all the time, deep down the field. And he's just good at football. And, yeah, he's been very fun to watch. I think he's still under the radar because the Bears are so bad. And, you know, they had, like, four different quarterbacks at a point this season. But Mooney kind of produced with all four quarterbacks. It didn't really matter. At some capacity, he produced no matter what. So, yeah, going into next year, I'll still be excited about him again. And maybe, hopefully, a new coach. You know, Fields has a full season under his belt, you know, entering season two. It'll be fun. I'll be just as high in Mooney as I was this year.
Yeah, I agree, man. And I think that considering he went undrafted in a lot of smaller leagues. Hell, in a lot of other leagues. Like, we were talking about him on the waiver wire at the very beginning of the season.
It was one of the two late best ball stacks that I had so much interest in. It was the Bears with Fields, Mooney, and Kmet. And then the other one was Carolina with Darnold Moore and Robbie Anderson.
Oh,
looked great for the first 4 weeks when Darnold had, like, when DJ Moore was a top five receiver and Darnold had, like, seven rushing touchdowns.
Oh, we'll get to it, man. We're going to get to that offense and talk about it, because it's definitely on this list later in the show. But got to walk into best hits, man. Players that we crushed, and I know there are two really good ones on your list. I'm going to go off the beaten page here, and I'm going to discuss two situations that I talked about a lot, whether it was best ball or walking into the season. And the way that we talked about it constantly. We did streams about this, Adam. For best balls, I said, look, if I'm not walking away with Rondell Moore in a lot of my drafts, I am walking away with all the Christian Kirk that I could possibly have in best balls this year. The guy was being slept on. And yes, you could talk about DeAndre Hopkins and him being out and Christian Kirk ascending to a role. Maybe he didn't have that before. You still can't sit here and take away the production that Christian Kirk has had. If he walks, he could walk out of this season, much like Darnell Mooney, after this week, with 1,000 yards in his back pocket, and he is in that same realm as Darnell Mooney, man. As a guy that he was awesome when you needed him to be. He ascended. He was pivotal for your team. He was the wide receiver 28 in fantasy points per game, wide receiver 23 in total points. And for a player that you were getting him free in drafts. And we're talking about all these different counting stats and a guy that's literally been, I mean, good Lord, Adam, like even beginning into the season, you look at the first 7 weeks, he's got four top 20 weeks. He was wide receiver 9, 20, 17, 19. Later in the season with Hopkins, when you needed him the most in the fantasy playoffs, he was the wide receiver 5, 38, and 27. He was good, man. And you look at his role in this offense. I mean, is it money moving forward? Sure. But like, I'm not going to sit here and sleep on or take anything away from what Christian Kirk did this year at all. Love Christian Kirk walking out of this season. I mean, he played extremely well, man. And then another situation where you heard everybody talking about, okay, well, it's a fourth round rookie. Oh, okay. It's a garbage team. Oh, there's not going to be any production. Oh, it's going to be a 3-4 way committee. And because of injuries, I still don't think we saw the massive breakout that was still possible for Michael Carter. And I'm just going to throw this and throw this net a little bit farther and say the Jets backfield was a massive hit this year. And a player that with Michael Carter, yes, he was the RB29 in fantasy points per game. But for a player that everybody was like, oh, he's got drafted in the fourth round. He's never going to do good. He's not going to be great for fantasy. Every game where he played more than 50% of the snaps, Adam, and there's a lot of them, RB24, RB14, RB1, 34, 12, 59, and RB17. I still think that there's a ceiling to be had for Michael Carter. Tevin Coleman is gone after this year. He's a guy that, is he going to get the projectable pass game volume that he got with Mike White in those few weeks? No. Can it be higher than what it was walking out of this season? And we still could see a higher ceiling for Michael Carter? Absolutely, yes. And when I throw the Jets backfield into this, man, I will mention Ty Johnson because we talked about him on Best Ball streams. We talked about him as a waiver wire candidate. He's a player that, like, where you got him and if you ended up having to start him, he was awesome, man. RB30 or better in 6 of the 15 games he played this year. And if you're looking at that as a flex or in a pinch, really good production. So as bad as the Jets were on defense, and this team is still not great overall, this backfield was immensely productive, especially where you drafted them in fantasy or, hell, picked them up off the waiver wire.
Yeah, and for the Jets next season, like, Zach Wilson the last couple weeks has showed a lot of signs as being the franchise quarterback for this team. And if I'm the Jets, and you talked about it a lot with their run blocking, they were in the top half of the league in yards before contact per attempt. So like their run blocking unit, despite missing,
hold on. They were not. I want to correct one thing because I want people to understand how damn good their offensive line was. Since week 8, they're not even in the top half, Adam. They're number 1. The top offensive line in the NFL in yards before contact per attempt. Number 1. So, yeah, they've been blocking their asses off.
Yeah, that's exactly what you were on a lot in the offseason, is that this offensive line is going to be better run blocking than anybody thinks. And if I'm the Jets next season, just the Saints offense from when they had Kamara and Michael Thomas, that should be your offense. Elijah Moore's your Michael Thomas, Michael Carter's your Alvin Kamara, and that's where your offense runs through. That's it. That's what it needs to be. Jameson Crowder's a free agent. Corey Davis, we'll see if he's, healthy, but like that should just be your offense. And I think you should add one more player to this that you hit on, and we're seeing it the last couple weeks. He's been a league winner. You were especially hiring him as like your final, player in best ball. Rashad Penny. Just looks like a stud the last couple weeks. And we say this with a ton of players, but if they stay healthy, but Penny's shown that he's been maybe the best running back in the NFL the last 3 weeks. Breaking tackles, ripping off long runs. He's been amazing.
He's been awesome. And yeah, dude, I mean, I don't want to just stay on the W train here, but let's enjoy some of the good calls, man. This late round basket of running backs. Like, how much did I preach and talk about all these guys during the entire offseason? Like, I was like, they're free. Like, why are you not getting any exposure? And yes, there are some misses there. Like, yes, was Quadri all of a sudden a miss? Okay, sure. Rashad Penny sure as hell wasn't. And Ty Johnson just talked about that guy.
Especially in best ball, too. Like, when you have, you know, a Jonathan Taylor or a Cooper Kupp or a Deebo Samuel carrying your team in the all season, and then when you get down to this point, all of a sudden you have Rashad Penny inserted in your lineup, and it's like, oh, you have a top seven running back. And that's just like all, a lot of these championship teams and best ball and season long, like I would bet a lot of them have Rashad Penny on the roster.
As well as another guy, and he was free in drafts, Adam, and best ball redraft. Waiver wire. People wanted to say that there's no way he was as good. It was all just preseason crap. Ramondre Stevenson won people a bunch of leagues. Like, whether it's taking home multiple different weeks and putting you to the top of a waiver wire pickup. He was awesome, man. So, yeah, I'll own the W. And that's something we'll be talking about walking into best ball season next year, is that these free ticket running backs. And people talk about zero running back and stuff like that. But even if you don't go zero running back, you can deploy whatever type of draft strategy you want to. I'm going to be preaching yet again, walking into next best ball season, that you need to be getting exposure to running backs that are one injury away from massive, massive workloads. Rashad Penny, Ramondre Stevenson. I talked about Quadri Olsen. Oh, guess what? The player name was wrong, but Cordarrelle Patterson, the process was right. I just got the name wrong, people. How many other running backs, Ramondre Stevenson, that were free in drafts? Elijah Mitchell, in drafts, all offseason, in best ball. We're going to be talking about it again, man, but that is also one of the skeleton keys to best ball and taking down these leagues.
Mm-hmm. And not to quite to that level, because he was, you know, but still relatively late for a lot of the summer. We could have had this player and comeback player, James Conner.
Yep.
Just massive.
Absolutely agree.
Massive.
Absolutely agree. And go ahead, dude. Lean into this Bills call that you got right all offseason. And one of the things that you threw some shade at another player, calling him the really expensive version of this guy. We want to talk about players that help people hoist championships at the end of the year based off of what they did down the stretch run. It's a fantastic call, and you were on it all offseason.
Yeah, I just, you know, sometimes when you watch this team religiously, you hit on some stuff. But we talked about it. Like, Devin Singletary, I said this for so long, he's better than you think. I tweeted every single week on Sunday, Devin Singletary is better at football than you think. Devin Singletary is better at football than you think. And started, you know, in the offseason, we saw reports that he looks faster, and that was encouraging for me. And then he starts the season as the clear starter. Then, of course, there's a couple weeks where Zach Moss gets more work. And then we see like 4 or 5 weeks where Zach Moss is a healthy scratch. And Singletary, like, he's just good. Like, he's not, is Devin Singletary right now, or will he ever be a top 10 to 12 running back in the league? No, probably not. But he's good. He's good at football. He's not the fastest player in the league, but he breaks tackles. We've seen that the last 3 weeks. Sean McDermott has been absolutely just gushing over what Singletary's given this running game, which is very important given the fact that their running game has been pretty non-existent the last two seasons. Devin Singletary since week 15. 6th in the NFL in rushing attempts, 9th in rushing yards, 2nd in fantasy points. He has 220 carry games and 3 rushing touchdowns over the last 2 games. 2nd in touchdown runs with 4. 6th in yards after contact with 188, and 9th in missed tackles forced with 10. There was a play against the Falcons where he just literally lowered his shoulder and ran defender over. He's giving this running game a spark. His vision is better than Zach Moss's. Like the Bills run blocking unit, they've been top 5 in yards before contact. Singletary is, I'm not saying like if you draft him, you probably won your league, because you probably didn't start him for a ton of weeks, but the last 5 weeks, you probably started him. And I had a championship team that had Singletary and it made it to the championship round. Unfortunately, I had Zeke and DeAndre Swift on that team too, so I didn't win, but Singletary's kind of shown what I talked about for 2 years now. He's not going to be the most explosive running back. He's not going to have a top 5 season, but he's good at football. And the Bills clearly have shown that he's the number one running back on this team, and that'll continue. So as somebody that just really, as a Bills fan and as somebody in fantasy that was just tired of the Singletary disrespect, it was very fun to watch him. You know, he's always been efficient. It's not even just like it's been just the last 3 weeks and it's boosted his efficiency numbers. The guy's been over four, his yards per carry has been like the mid fours for his entire career. Like, he's just very efficient and very productive, and it won't wow you, but he's just, I say, he's just a good football player. So that was fun to watch. And then we got to talk about Amon-Ra, right?
Oh, we got to. I have to. You got to stretch. I don't want you to pull a hammy or anything like that. You got to sit here and take a victory lap on this.
Listen, we did the prospect episodes of the pod all offseason, and Amon-Ra, that was, I think he was my wide receiver 4 or 5 in the draft class right after, what, Waddle, Chase, Smith, and Bateman. It's kind of similar to Singletary, right? Oh, but he's slow. Okay. Is Devin Singletary slow compared to other running backs? Sure. But he breaks tackles and he churns out positive yardage. That's all that matters at running back. Is Amon-Ra St. Brown slow compared to other receivers? Absolutely. But he gets open. Seems pretty important for a receiver. And we've seen that. There were comparisons about him being this year's, you know, Jared Goff's Cooper Kupp. And obviously he won't post Cooper Kupp numbers. That's just not going to happen. He's not Cooper Kupp. But the way they used him has been very similar, almost like Robert Woods too. In the backfield, in motion, moving around the formation, in the slot around 70% of the time. You look at the last 4 weeks, the last 4 weeks, might be 5 weeks. Amon-Ra St. Brown, the last 5 weeks, 12, 12, 11, 11, 11 targets, a 30%+ target share in every one of those games. He's doing, like I said, he's doing a little bit of everything. He's lining up in the backfield. We saw him get on 3rd and 10. They motion Amon-Ra into the backfield on Sunday. He gets a draw, spins away from Quandre Diggs, an all-pro safety, in my opinion, especially when it comes to tackling, spins away from him and goes 25 yards to the house. Since week 13, Amon-Ra, 2nd interceptions of 43, 3rd in targets with 54, 5th in receiving yards with 451, 4th in touchdowns with 4. And oh, by the way, he's 8th in yards per route run during that span. So I compared him to Stevie Johnson. You compared him, I believe, to Jarvis Landry. And Amon-Ra just, he's like one of my favorite players in the entire draft class. And it's been, listen, I had a team that in my dynasty team that I took home the title, DJ Moore underwhelmed lately and in week 17. Same with Terry McLaurin. Stephon Diggs had an underwhelming game. And I literally won my dynasty league because of Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I'll tell you, winning the championship felt great, but winning it because of Amon-Ra St. Brown might have felt even better. He's awesome. He's good at football. Again, we can, metrics are important, but just because, like, first, why was he drafted in the 4th round? I'm sitting there watching the draft, and I know you were doing the live stream for the draft, and I'm sitting there like, okay, the Titans in round 3, they're going to draft him. They need a receiver. This team's going to draft him in round 3. They need a receiver. And I'm sitting there, the Lions are up in round 4. I'm like, if the Lions don't draft him here, I don't know what they're doing. And you were on this too. You said the Lions were a perfect fit, and we saw that. And now they clearly have something in Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I'm going to stop talking now because I could go for 20 more minutes. But yeah, Amon-Ra, it was awesome.
He played really well, man. I mean, he got the volume. We talked about him in the offseason. We talked about what his role could be for this offense. And that's why we took late shots on him in best ball. He was fantastic. And you saw what was in his range of outcomes the entirety of the season down the stretch run. And I think that to answer your question, he fell in fantasy drafts because of Detroit and it's the stink. He fell in the NFL draft because he didn't blaze his combine, man. Like, he had a 13th percentile speed score and he ran a 4.66. Like, as a guy that in his final year at USC, he was used more on the outside. Now, you saw his numbers dip because of that. But as a player, even Detroit tried to move him more outside to begin the season. It wasn't that until he took off at the end of the year that they moved him into like a 70% plus slot snap rate. And that's fine. He could still chew up the middle of the field. That's what you want. You want a guy that could separate, can get open, make easy completions, as well as give you something and another dynamic out of the backfield. Amon-Ra St. Brown had a fantastic rookie season, and I've seen all kinds of takes out there, people talking from a dynasty angle, you know, what are you doing with him and stuff like that. I'm still high on Amon-Ra walking into next season. Now he's a little bit murky. Did he have a perfect storm? Are there some things that are tingling my spider sense, like Brandon Ayuk-ish? Like, basically the entire offense, like, just caved around him and he got nothing but volume, sure. But he still earned it based off of efficiency. Like, you're talking about yards per route run. These types of metrics we talk about are also screamed to players that, one, deserve the volume, or two, because we believe around here, we subscribe to the fact that targets are earned by your ability to get open and separate. They're not given. They're earned.
He's so good against zone coverage. So good. He's awesome. That Seattle game, because Seattle plays a ton of zone. I'm sitting there watching. I'm just like, I'm watching that game, and I'm like, he just knows where the holes in defense are going to be every time. And that's just how I've approached receivers since I've been doing fantasy, you know, fantasy content and watching the draft and watching players in the draft class. It's like, I've always gravitated towards receivers that just run great routes and can get open. Like, obviously, Ja'Marr Chase is just an absolute alpha, amazing receiver. Jalen Waddle is an absolute, you know, awesome receiver. He's one of the fastest receivers in the league. Like, there's a reason they're drafted in the top five and top seven. They're awesome. I'm not saying Amon-Ra is better than them because he's not. But I've always just gravitated. I've enjoyed watching these route technicians that know how to get open, know how to read defenses. And that's what Amon-Ra St. Brown is. And that's why I love him so much in the offseason. And yeah, like, Hockenson missed time and Swift missed time. But it's also not like the Lions are going to be able to bring in a receiver that's going to warrant a ton of targets, whether it's free agency or the draft. I mean, maybe they do in the draft, but like, they have so many other, you know, holes in their team. I just, and here's the other thing. Not that Jared Goff was Aaron Rodgers by any means, but Amon-Ra did it the last couple weeks with Tim Boyle. Like, let's talk about that too.
Yep. It's a good point. I mean, really, you talk about situations and producing no matter who the quarterback is and stuff. It's exactly what Amon-Ra St. Brown did. He was fantastic for fantasy, man. I mean, you want to talk about him. We hear the term thrown around like it's just candy at Halloween. Like, oh, he's a league winner. He's a league winner. He's
won
a league winner.
Won me my league.
Amon-Ra was a league winner. Like, a legit, he was a league winner. Getting 11-plus targets in every damn week of the fantasy playoffs and the championship. Yeah, he was a league winner. Like, if you want to throw around that type of moniker for certain players, Amon-Ra St. Brown absolutely deserves it.
How exciting is it going to be to, you know, break down and analyze these rookie receivers going into next season? Because obviously Chase and Bateman and Smith or Waddle and Smith are like the clear top three, I think. But we obviously saw a huge stretch for Amon-Ra. Before Elijah Moore got hurt, he was on his way. Bateman, I think in year two he's going to have, you know, he's not going to miss the first half of the season or whatever. It's going to be very,
Watkins is gone too.
Right. It's going to be very exciting to watch the sophomore receivers next year, outside of the obvious ones we talked about, with a full season under their belt, with, you know, because like the sky's the limit for a lot of these players. So, and man, I would always tweet you and Pat Corain, because there was a stretch for Kadarius Toney looked like he was about to go crazy.
He played really well too,
and then he just couldn't stay healthy, and the Giants' offense is a mess. But yeah, hopefully he can stay healthy because he obviously showed a lot of signs as well.
Yeah, he played extremely well in his rookie season, man. So I think he deserves to be in that sophomore category of, you know, absolutely, what could they break out? Could they be monstrous in the next season? I mean, yeah, are you squinting your eyes a little bit more considering it's probably Daniel Jones under center? Sure, but Tony produced whenever he was on the field and healthy. All we need is health from him. Before we get in and own our worst L's of the year, I got to discuss this again with everybody out there, man. Profit Exchange, coming to New Jersey soon. It's a peer-to-peer betting exchange giving price-sensitive users the ability to get the best odds and prices in sports betting. So you're setting a line or a price for others to bet on, or placing a bet on an existing line. Right now, Profit Exchange is running a promotion called Exchange the Love. So with this, they're going to increase the go-live deposit by $25 for every 500 people that pre-register before launch. So go to ProfitExchange.com, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, Exchange.com, 21 and over and present in New Jersey. Terms apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, Adam, the favorite, the best part of the fantasy season, and we get to sit here and live it up, right? No, we're not. We're not. We're going to sit here and talk about our first L's, our best L's, our worst L's, all the L's, my friend. And we're going to wear them proudly. And I'm going to lead this off with, dear Lord, my heart still hurts. I'm happy for Elijah Mitchell, but all of my love for Trey Sermon came crashing down. And Kyle Shanahan apparently hates that man. So for all of my best ball exposures. For everybody out there that listened to me talk about Trey Sermon and his fit in San Francisco, for everybody that drafted Trey Sermon in your leagues, I apologize sincerely. Sincerely. Because I feel this pain too. I'm not going to sit here and preach to something on this mic that I'm not going to sit here as well do myself. So, yeah, I'm feeling that pain too, people. You're not alone.
Yeah, and there was obviously some risk. I know the draft capital was solid, but it was still Kyle Shanahan. But I mean, what a weird way that season started too, because it was already one of the more, you know, one of the more fluid backfields in fantasy. Week one, Raheem Mostert was going to go off that game. We can all agree that, and yep. Gets hurt, and then Sermon and Hasty that filled in. And it was like, okay, or no, it was Elijah Mitchell and Hasty. Sermon was a healthy scratch.
Yeah, he was a healthy scratch.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, like this could be Sermon's opportunity. Then Elijah Mitchell balls out, and it was like, okay, everybody's you know adding Elijah Mitchell, and then it's like, wait, what about Trey Sermon? Like he could easily get one. You know, he's obviously going to be active next week, and if he balls out, then it could be a 2-man backfield, and then Elijah Mitchell just kept producing. But yeah, I mean, like. The reason you were high on him, and it made sense, the way Sermon ran in college, the offensive scheme he was in, it was a perfect marriage with San Francisco's running scheme. And we just didn't really get a chance to see it. Because there was what game was it when he actually got decent run and then he got concussed? There was that one
Green
game.
Bay, I believe.
You might have been right. It was either Green Bay or Seattle. He had 19 carries against Seattle, so it probably wasn't that game. No, I think it was either Green Bay or Arizona. But yeah, like we didn't really. Elijah Mitchell was incredible, and he deserves to be the starting running back for this team. We also just didn't really get to see Trey Sermon get a shot.
Yeah, I mean the Shanahan doghouse doesn't care. The Shanahan doghouse doesn't give a crap about your fantasy team. The Shanahan doghouse does not care about your heart or your feelings. It's a sad place. I've been there before. I know it very well. All of my previous Dante Pettis love can attest for that. What can I say?
Maybe you should stay away from this team, dude.
I know, man. Maybe I should just learn my damn lesson and stay away from San Francisco outside of taking late shots, because it wasn't like we hated Elijah Mitchell. We had Emory Hunt on the pod and talked about him as a prospect. We said there was a lot to like about Elijah Mitchell.
By the way, I have to do it again, but you know who was on Elijah Mitchell, right? As well as Emory? Mm-hmm. It was Ray.
Yep.
Sure Ray said he'd be this year's James Robinson.
You love to see it, man. Sharp people making sharp calls. Ray has been doing it and will continue to do it, man. So many players that he's hit on this year. So people need to be listening and following and
yes.
Consuming every bit of content that you can from Ray G, because the man speaks the truth. I've had enough pain here for a few seconds that I want to kick this back over to you before we head down Pain Street for me again.
So I'm not going to get into it too much, but we did talk about it. I have Zeke as a miss for me. Again, I don't care about he was RB6. Like, it wasn't what I expected. I'm just putting that down as an L. DJ Moore.
Do you want some more pain for Zeke before you move over to DJ Moore?
Yeah, go for it. You want me to keep going?
No. I'm going to help dig the knife. I'm going to twist the knife a little bit.
Go for it, man.
Do you remember, can you imagine ranking Ezekiel Elliott over Jonathan Taylor in fantasy?
Oh, I did.
I know you did. That's spin. I
definitely did.
Hey, guess what? Me too. It's so much fun. It's not fun. It's not fun at all. All right. Go ahead. Get into your next player.
And then Jesus, DJ Moore, it looked like it was going to be awesome. And again, when you watch the film, DJ Moore is an incredible football player. But just the quarterback situation, just Terry McLaurin, DJ Moore, please get these players quarterbacks, please. DJ Moore, like, again, some of the games, like, despite there was a stretch where, like, the Panthers didn't throw for 200 yards in, like, 5 straight games, and DJ Moore was still getting, like, 60 or 70 yards. But obviously, I had him ranked pretty aggressively ahead of a lot of other receivers. I think he was like my wide receiver 11 or 12 or something like that, where consensus was around like 16, 17, 18. But, again, like as good as a lot of these players are, the offense was stupid because they just, even with Christian McCaffrey out, they were a run first, slow offense, which They had one of the worst run blocking units in the league, and Chuba Hubbard was actually graded as one of the least efficient running backs in the NFL. And they were like, you know what, we're going to slow the game down and run the football instead of throwing DJ Moore. Like, he still got the targets, but I believe if you look at it at the end of the season, he'll be among the league leaders in uncatchable targets. I can almost guarantee that. So that was frustrating, but again, dynasty-wise, he's a perfect buy low, because if somehow he finally gets that quarterback upgrade, he is going to flirt with top 10 numbers. He gets 1,000 yards every year. He's just good at football, and I just hope he gets in the right situation for him to really realize his full potential. And then my last one, the Jacksonville receivers, Marvin Jones and Laviska Shenault. Obviously, Marvin Jones, nobody is higher on him than me every season. It looked good to start, but again, with everything that happened in Jacksonville, plus Trevor Lawrence not exactly playing well, the way they misused Laviska Shenault after Chark went down, they used him as an outside receiver running vertical routes and not moving him around the formation. It took Jamal Agnew to go on IR for them to finally do that. And then Laquon Treadwell came in and played in two wide sets, and Laviska played in the slot. And I thought they would use him kind of like how Deebo Samuel was being used, and they just didn't. So that was a huge miss for me. They were two of my favorite late round receivers, and they had, you know, Marvin Jones had a couple good weeks, but outside of that, it was a very, very, very disappointing season for the entire Jacksonville offense, but especially those two pass catchers that I was very high on.
Well, we've come full circle. You're owning W's for Bills players, and now you're owning an L for Marvin Jones. I've seen it all, man. I've seen it all. This is the topsy-turvy world that we live in fantasy, and just to let you put us through the spin cycle of emotions here. I mean, owning all these L's, man, it's not fun. It's not fun, people. And I want to discuss two other players. One I've already brought up before, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I was so immensely high on this year. So high on him. And whether it was injuries, just not being productive. I'll toss this back to you, Adam, in what I'm about to say here. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, basically my hope for him is what we saw from Devin Singletary to end the season. To get run, to get touchdowns, to get usage in one of the best offenses in football, and it just didn't pan out. Going from one of the best offenses in football to one of the worst, and to close this out, I will own the large amount of pain by drafting a ton of Chase Claypool everywhere, in Dynasty, in Best Ball, in Redraft. He's a player I still believe in the talent. If you look at all the underlying metrics, that I still believe in the talent. But whether we could talk about bonehead mistakes, we could talk about underperformance, we could talk about drop balls, and no, we don't believe in drops mattering that much. But considering the production that he left on the field, it hurts for fantasy. Chase Claypool was a massive L for me. Big miss this year. Had a ton of him. I was taking him in those middle rounds over a lot of other productive players like Deebo Samuel. And it hurt, man. You could talk about how bad Ben Roethlisberger was this year, but it wasn't like Chase Claypool was any better. He had some games where he got massive usage and still didn't put it up for you, man. Like,
especially with Juju out for most of the season. It's just...
Yep.
It's just... That was weird, but... I agree. Like, the talent is still, I think Chase Claypool has some of the best body control in the NFL. Like, some of the ways he contorts his body to make adjustments and make catches, like, it's like week one, saw it firsthand. He went up and mossed Trey White. Like, he's got serious potential. It's just, you know, inconsistent usage, you know, some of the drops. And again, who's going to be his quarterback next year? That's a question mark. I mean, we're assuming Ben's retiring, but we'll see.
I mean, all I'll say is, as long as it's not Mason Rudolph, then he's in for a quarterback upgrade, I think. Even if you're talking about, like, just basement starters, like the Teddy Bridgewaters of the world, or Jimmy Garoppolo.
Maybe Kirk Cousins is there.
I mean, Kirk Cousins and Jimmy G would be massive upgrades for him.
Sure.
Considering what Ben Roethlisberger has not done this year, I mean, I think both of them stand to be, and it's crazy to talk about Jimmy G as being a massive upgrade for a wide receiver, but I think that's real. Like, I think that we've seen Garoppolo play efficient in offense, and the thing that all Chase Claypool has a lot of things he needs to clean up in his game, but he also needs catchable targets on a weekly basis. And that's something I can at least say Jimmy G can do, as opposed to what we saw out of Roethlisberger this year, man. It was a tough scene for Chase Claypool.
Yeah, but we live and we learn, man. We live and we learn.
I mean, we talk about the hits, we talk about the misses, man. There are going to be those every single season. And if you've been following along and listening to this podcast all year, then you understand that. We're going to get a lot of things right. We're also going to get a lot of things wrong. And how we deploy all these things and utilize this in fantasy, we're going to be back next year in the fantasy season to sit here and talk about all these things on a weekly basis. We're not going anywhere in the offseason, people, like we talked about. It's going to be prospects. It's going to be a lot of dynasty talk, NFL draft talk. We're going to discuss all these different things all offseason. So I know Adam is going to sit here and hit up the DFS streets later this week. We're probably going to take a little break during the playoffs and stuff, and get back here in the offseason and help everybody in all different formats, whether it's best ball, prospects, and talk a lot of football this offseason. So, massive thank you to everybody that's been tuning into the podcast all year. I mean, if you've been rocking with us from last summer, hell, week one, or you stumbled upon us 2 weeks ago, thank you. From the bottom of our hearts, it really means a ton to us that, you know, we see download numbers continuing to go up. We see people hitting us up on Twitter and social media and talking about how they've taken down their leagues or DFS and trying to help people win it. And I know it sounds cliche, but that's honestly why we try to go the extra mile. We look through all the different stuff. We try to give you as much actionable content on this podcast as we can. So for Adam and myself, for Fade the Chalk, we'll see you in a few weeks. We're out of here.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.